As I was introduced, I'm Evan Smith, and today I'm going to talk about how anybody can start capacity planning at any size. There's four simple steps, and it's actually a lot easier than you think. A lot of these steps overlap with areas of being an SRE, so you may already be doing a lot of these things and adhering to these principles without even really realizing that they're a vital part of doing your capacity planning. Ooh. I've got to get the placement right, I think. There we go. So I've spent nearly a year now being an SRE at Hoster Graphite. Before that, I spent 6 years as a full-stack web developer. After starting a hopefully illustrious career as an SRE, I noticed that there was a large gap in the capacity planning world for an introduction or even just basics on how to get started with capacity planning. So that's what this talk is today. If you're not doing it, how do you start immediately? So first of all, why does anyone need to bother with capacity planning? For the business, it's there for anticipating sharp growth, and it's there to make sure that you're only spending as much as you need. For the ops people on the ground, it's there to make sure that you don't get paged at 3 a.m. on a Sunday just because you need to shove a single, two, three servers into a load balancer to make sure that the capacity can keep up. The goal for capacity planning is to optimize risk versus cost. Obviously, the more risk you have, the more it will cost. Or the more risk you will have, the less it will cost. And the less risk you have, the more it will cost to maintain that reliability. Throughout the talk, I'll be providing examples based on a case study of Generico Shop. Generico Shop is an e-commerce platform that runs 8 retailers worldwide. Very simple. Some people are probably in the same boat as them. We've been running for 5, 10, 15 years just fine without a capacity plan. Why should we start now? So I'd like to encourage you to take a couple or all of these steps and see if and try to apply them and see if your pages and your cash flow stabilize a little bit more afterwards. To begin with, intents and SLOs are definitely something you already have for your systems. It wouldn't be an SRE talk if I wasn't mentioning SLOs and error budgets. It's kind of a staple at this point. So the start of any new service begins with a conversation between the SREs and the service owners. What does the business want? What does the service require? Understanding intent begins with the SLO. Often this is a back and forth between the SRE and the other parties to help establish realistic, appropriate, and on-call friendly SLOs. So I'm going to run through a couple of examples of people come to you with requests. And you'll have seen these already. They come from the SRE book. But they're a good talking point and a good starting point. The first one is an explicit resource request. This request has a large degree of freedom, and it's potentially very easy to fulfill, although it really doesn't explain the reasoning behind why it needs these requirements. Why 50 cores? Why clusters X, Y, and Z? This is just the start of a conversation. Even something that's very explicit still requires a lot of back and forth to determine whether it's appropriate to that their request, whether their request is appropriate. With the next one, we get a lot more flexibility. And we can understand kind of at a more human level what happens if service food doesn't really meet the requirements it needs. The request for us is quite difficult, though. It pushes a lot of knowledge about the load tolerance of the service and the resource consumption back on the SRE. Often, it's better to actually go through step by step with the devs how to determine these figures themselves and kind of like teach an engineer to fish rather than expecting you to do all the work. So it's good to push back, ask them to do some load testing, and come back to you when they know the figures for what their service needs and what it can operate at. This one is our case study, and it's a much more abstract requirement. So we have like probably the greatest amount of flexibility here, and we can kind of determine a lot of the ways we want to do it. So maybe N+2 works, or maybe there's a specific deployment strategy. Maybe we can check the number of active nodes in the load balancer. It kind of gives us a lot of freedom to deploy and give it and put it out there the way we as SREs and the on-call people want. But we have to push back and ask certain questions. The biggest question is, so why five nines? And they'll probably respond with, it's a point of failure for our website and for all of our sales. So you start a conversation. Five nines is 5 minutes of unplanned downtime a year. If it costs you €10,000 to keep your service at five nines, what is €10,000 worth of sales in minutes to you? And they'll probably respond with, it costs us a lot less to lose, say, 5 minutes of sales than it would to spend €10,000 on the service. Of course, that's different per organization. Three nines is probably a more realistic goal. It's 9 hours of unplanned downtime a year, and could you live with that instead? And they'll probably come back with, yeah, now that you put it that way, yeah, we can probably do it in nine hours if it doesn't cost us €10,000. And you can ask, where in the world is most of your business? Maybe we can define different SLOs or provide certain regions as failover for the larger regions. These are the kind of questions you kind of need to be asking in your conversations. To move that clock hand away from the fear of losing business and to the fear of losing business over to understanding that a low error budget is going to cost you a lot more operationally in the long run. It's going to be a lot longer than this as a conversation, but it's totally worth it having this at the start of your planning. So part two, service trigger boogaloo. Service triggers are the factors that affect your service level indicator. They're the thing that drives it one way or another. In capacity planning, these are called driver metrics. Finding these metrics can be tricky, but thinking logically about the bounds of your system, your CPU, your RAM, your queue size, your throughput, things like that, that makes it a lot easier to see what should affect it. And viewing your SLI over the last couple of months can give you a good feel for what factors into changes. When plotting your SLI, it's good to search for inflection points. Lining those up with other metric changes helps to identify places where you had to scale rapidly or where things changed suddenly. Inflection points are points at which the trend of the graph just changes significantly. It's something where it's a place where something unexpected happened. Inflection points aren't always very obvious, but it's worth paying close attention to what you plot because finding them can lead to more intuitive links and differences between your metrics. They'll make a lot more sense on a personal level. So we sat down with Mr. Shop and his engineer to look through the metrics and see if we can, you know, spot any patterns in the last couple months, better understand what drives their service, and to see what their current capacity planning actually looks like. So in this graph, I've highlighted the kind of more subtle inflection points for the users. But you can see the very obvious ones in the capacity there. So the capacity is in the blue line, the number of users is the green line, and their services is the yellow constant line. Their number of services doesn't change over, we'll say this is the course of a year. You can see that very reactively, they're pumping up their capacity. Like, it happens very suddenly. And from an engineering point of view in the offices, at those capacity increase points, they're not meeting demand, or they're a little below capacity. So they panic and shove 16 servers into the load balancer to help meet that capacity. So we come away with the above insights. Their number of services and number of users are directly proportional. They've been putting 16 servers in every couple months when they hit the next 64,000 unit mark. So we come away with a very simple equation. It's a kind of simplified pattern of what their service looks like. So it's just the number of services multiplied by the number of users. A quick note, though, on a common pitfall here is that a lot of people very quickly jump to the more users you have, the more capacity you need. But generally, it's something that the users do that's actually the indicator for how much capacity you need. For instance, for us, we run metric ingestion and monitoring. So it's not the number of users we have. It's the number of data points they send, or the data points per protocol they send that we need to scale with. So at this point, you've done your research. You know your driver metrics. You have a defined SLO. You sat down and hammered out something that's reasonable for both parties. And it's time to discuss when you should increase or decrease your capacity. And that last one's very important. Because just a lot of people think of capacity planning in a very one-directional way. They think it only goes up. You only ever increase your capacity. But you have to understand that there will be points at which you actually want to come down again. And a lot of times, auto-scaling can kind of do this, but it's still very helpful to have a forecast so that the business can understand what the costs will be in the future. Although we're manually forecasting something here, you can easily apply this to auto-scaling rules, but you still need the manual forecast for everyone else to understand where you will be in 5, 10, 15 months. So first, document everything. It seems kind of obvious, but people can learn from what you've done to better refine your plan. If you don't leave any form of trail about how your investigation was conducted, what insights you gained or what methods you learned about, you're going to have people retreading the same water every time they want to refine your plan or they want to make a new plan. Be the change you want to see in the world and start documenting everything you do. When you come back to reevaluate this plan in a couple months, it will make so much more sense if you know why you chose this metric, why you made this assumption, and why you did everything you did. Any insights you gain from the metrics should be actionable. That means there should be an action based on those metrics. You should make the graphs on dashboards explain in simple terms where the capacity needs to be increased, decreased, or whether it's stable right now. There's no point and no benefit to throwing a bunch of figures at an engineer or maybe just a business person looking at the graphs and expecting them to have read the 5-page capacity planning doc you did 3 months ago or to read all of the research you've done. They need to know in an instant whether or not I need to scale my service right now. So some tips is obviously use simple colors. You know, green for stable, yellow for decrease, red for increase. Those would be colors, wouldn't they? But for terms, increase, decrease, and stable are very kind of like simple terms. They're easy English and people kind of understand them. But use whatever works for your team. Like just find a combination that people don't kind of panic at the sight of it and feel kind of happy about when they see everything stable. Most importantly though, don't bury the more technical details. So just because something tells you to increase or decrease, if you're the on-call engineer, you're probably going to want to vet that decision. So at some point, you should set up a non-paging alert for changing your capacity. When that alert goes off, the on-call persons shouldn't have to go hunting through several dashboards just to assess whether or not the recommended action in the alert is the right call. In Grafana, you can just add a row beneath it and hide the and make it collapsible. So you just hide the row. And whenever they come to it and they see, oh, I need to increase my capacity, they unhide that row and see all the figures and all the assumptions. And they see the links to your capacity planning doc. They can make an informed decision. They can go through all of the details and decide for themselves whether that alert is correct or whether we need to refine our capacity plan. So some things you definitely need in this panel is you need links to your capacity plan, the detailed graphs behind your actionable insights, and explanations about your thresholds and your assumptions for the service trigger metrics. You should clearly state any assumptions you've made. To begin with, if you're not... Oh, sorry, I've skipped a slide. So an important observation about what Generico gave us in our last case study slide is that increasing by 16 servers every 64,000 units of those users by services means that for the majority of time between capacity increases, there's about 14 or 15 of their servers just lying idle. There's no reason for them to be there. the trigger should definitely be about 4 every 16,000 units, or 1 per 4,000 units if they want to accept that kind of risk. Something else I haven't mentioned about this section until now is that adding in a buffer to your service trigger will give you the opportunity to only ever have to scale for capacity during business hours. You should be able to ignore these alerts outside of your normal work schedule. Here, we've given them about like a 10% buffer, which is roughly 1,500 units. This should be sufficient enough that you can have a non-paging alert that goes off in the middle of the night, but when you come into work in the morning, you can see it's there and assess whether you need to increase or decrease your capacity. Lastly, and the last step, we've got to take everything we've learned and get all our eggs together to project those estimates into the future. This section is the most important for coming back to in the next couple months to assess whether the plan is still working or not. It's also the most important for displaying to people who maybe aren't as technically minded as you what things will look like in the future. To begin with, if you're not tracking your capacity right now, start immediately. It's so much harder to do any of this if you haven't been monitoring the capacity of your services already. This is probably the easiest indicator of whether your plan is working or not. Does what we predicted line up with what actually happened? How much did it differ? Maybe we can make small tweaks to get us back in line with what we predicted, or maybe we can make small tweaks to our capacity plan so that they are actually accurate now. Another advantage to recording your capacity is that it's so much easier to predict the future if you can use all of your data from the past. Those inflection points and capacity increases we talked about earlier are exactly what informed our service triggers. So we should also use them to predict the kind of time frame we expect for increases. Otherwise, your alerts and dashes are still just reactionary actions you need to know where you're going. Probably one of the most important points I'd like to hammer home from this talk is that it's not just you looking at all of these graphs and forecasts. Put that shit in a table and show off your hard work. Other engineers and the business folk need to know that what the infrastructure should look like in 5, 10, 15, 20 months. For your table, leave a couple columns at the end so you can record the actual state, the dates of the increases, the actual figures, and how well they match up against your plan. Use them to reevaluate your capacity plan and determine when it's not working anymore. For tips, your plan's buffer should also account for lead time. So lead time is the amount of time it takes to go from having no server whatsoever to having a server in production. For some people, this means the time it takes to order a server from a manufacturer, get it into a data center, get it installed, and into the load balancer. For others, it's simply how long does it take for AWS to spin up a new EC2 instance? How long should I care about that? It's good to account for lead time in the budget you provide. Because if you don't account for lead time, what will happen is you will have exhausted your budget, your alert will be going off, and suddenly you've got to wait maybe 30 minutes if you're lucky, or a week if you're not. In terms of defining and finding your driver metrics, machine learning has some really great methods for choosing your driver metrics that we've been experimenting with. So PCA is principal component analysis. It's a subsection of feature selection. And using regression methods just to predict a linear model based on, you know, your capacity and several metrics will automatically eliminate any features that aren't relevant. It's a very good thing. It's very easy to just kind of pump maybe like 10, 20 metrics into this, see what the model spits out, see what it eliminates, and just carry on from there. And capacity planning is not a set it and forget it activity. It's an ongoing thing. You're probably going to go and either define someone or define a task that crops up maybe once every 2 weeks, once a month, once every couple months, depending on, you know, how you feel about it. That task should be to reevaluate your capacity plans. It should be to look at the actual figures, see where we are in the forecast, and assess whether or not, like, we're on track, we're below target, above target, or if there's something else that's affected the service in the meantime. Maybe we launched a new feature or a new service that depends on it that upped the usage. We need to kind of assess and anticipate that kind of growth to make sure that our predictions still make sense. And at this point, I'd also, like, I've been talking a lot with people at the conference the last couple of days, and like something that's become very apparent to me is that people prefer to learn from the kind of, or they would prefer to hear about the failures of what happened. So when we started our capacity plan, we actually made two failures in our first two capacity plans. One of them was that we defined a driver metric, or we defined our primary driver metric as being a function of several different ones, and it was X percent of servers under our CPU threshold that we thought was safe. And once we got to like 5 servers, we would up the capacity. So this is not a good idea, and I would advise not doing that. So if you come upon some kind of, where you think it's very clever to do that, there are things like the universal scalability law that kind of make that defunct. Amdahl's law applies, and it's unfortunate. There's also way too many reasons that this could breach the CPU threshold. Like, maybe we have temporary cron jobs that run, or, you know, maybe we were using it in our job infrastructure, so maybe we were just kind of extra busy that day. It didn't really make sense, and it was totally our fault for not really anticipating how our service actually works and understanding kind of basic CS models about capacity. In another example, we tried using linear regression, like just least squares method, to predict what the capacity should be and then compare it to what our actual capacity is. The main problem with this was that it required too long a period to form that linear regression properly, that it was so expensive we could only run it once a day. This was insane. It pretty much locked down our service for like 10, 20 minutes at a time, and it required such a long period that if we ever lost a portion of that period, like the capacity planning is just gone. So this did happen to us because we moved our monitoring to a separate cluster outside of our production cluster, and to give the ops their own isolated environment. And we lost, obviously, the kind of historical data because, realistically, we didn't need to look back that far for anything except this specific capacity plan. So we quickly realized that the capacity plan is going off once a day, every day, for about, like, maybe a week before we were like, yeah, no, that's wrong. So we also didn't normalize that linear regression. So for the regression nerds out there, that meant that outliers significantly impacted our capacity plan. So there were several days where you'd come in, the alert would be on, and you'd realize it's like one tiny, tiny point that happened maybe at 3 a.m., and the rest are totally fine. It's a single outlier. So tips are understand the fundamentals of CS, unlike me, and also pick acceptable ranges and periods for your capacity plan. Ideally, you probably want to time shift it maybe back 30 minutes and take like a 15-minute span of whatever your driver metrics are. Like, those are acceptable values because they're very quick to compute, very quick to do. You can run them several times a day, and you can get a good feel for your environment. And try to avoid my mistakes, I guess, is the last thing. So I'm not sure if I rushed through that too quickly, but thank you. You can find me at The Joker's Thief on pretty much any social media, and you can email me if you're not too comfortable with asking questions here, or find me outside. I'm very approachable. Anyway, that's me. Thank you very much for listening.
We have time for questions.
Hello, my name is Paul von Bloomberg. So the charts that you showed assume that the load that you need to provide is more or less constant. But how do you plan for like extreme events in the year? If you talk about sales, that can be something like Black Friday, but one day in a year, you need twice your capacity.
So generally, there's a lot of thoughts around that, and Netflix have a great talk, actually. I have further reading here, and in the same video as the first one, you should watch that if you're looking for a more detailed answer. But generally, you're going to want to use like past data from like last year to determine kind of which seasons are more high impact. You will also probably want to, like, the thing you should do before you're launching a service is you should load test it and make sure that you know what your service can take. And then you'll use kind of as much information you can get from, say, the business side of it to understand what kind of traffic are we expecting for, like, say, Black Friday, and try and extrapolate from your load test results, how do we meet that demand? And how do we kind of like give ourselves an extra buffer where if there's that kind of huge spike of inorganic growth, can we still meet the demand even if we go over the estimates? So a lot of that is actually is a collaboration between the business and the SREs. So the business will tell you what kind of sales they're expecting, and you can kind of extrapolate sales or whatever. And you can extrapolate kind of how much capacity you might need to meet that demand. So in that case, it is very much a non-technical discussion that has to be converted into your own language. Sorry, I hope that helped. But anyway, if you look at the video and the first thing up there, I'll be distributing the slides, and the conference will too. Netflix has a very good talk on how do you plan for seasonal activity.
Any more questions?
I didn't really get this threshold and percentage you showed with TTP and UDP. I guess this is like your ingestion for hosted graphite.
Yeah.
But what are your key KPIs when you showed this Grafana? What actually is like this percentage, and this is over, under? Because I see the servers and the users, this example is simple, but this one is kind of confusing for me.
I must admit I didn't really like explain anything about this slide because I was just kind of using it as an example. So this is probably those two things I talked about at the end. They're pretty much like shown in these graphs because we used other capacity plans based on those things as well. These are good examples of kind of what not to do. So this is the number of servers below the threshold. So I purposely didn't give any specifics about our service, and these are a lot of kind of either obfuscated or randomly generated metrics because I'm not allowed to talk about the specifics. But these are good examples of kind of what not to do. They're the two, I probably should have mentioned that on the slide actually, but the two things I mentioned at the end, the number of servers below the threshold, don't do that. And that one, the second one, that yellow line at the top, that the trend line is, that's the linear regression based on 6 months worth of data. Don't do that. I hope that's kind of like cleared up that you don't really need to pay too much attention to this slide, but if you want to talk about it afterwards, I'm happy to go through specifics or whatever. Any other questions?
But maybe, I mean, the important part of this slide was this providing the context and this information. So how does it now look if this is the old failed attempts? So what does this
so
context look
like?
So
the things
now
around those graphs are still kind of the same. So you got your stuff on the left, which is your link to the capacity plan. You've got the threshold for when you should increase it, and notice I don't have a decrease there, so that's also a bad sign. And it also states any assumptions we made. So we have that's X percent under Y threshold. So you can see that we have 8 cores per server, 800% max, and the assumption is that that they are 8 cores, they all have 8 cores, and that our threshold is 160% for each host. And then on the other side is we have a copy of what this was, but it's got the actual numbers and the thresholds. So you can understand where our threshold is, and you can understand why we're saying increase it right now, or why we're saying it's stable right now, is because it's at 4% of our servers are under the the threshold. So combined with the context on the left and the kind of further detail on the right, those are the important bits. Having the graph in the middle gives you a time series of what's on the right, essentially. So that's what it looked like for the last 3 hours. And then the 4% on the right is what it looks like right now. So it just gives you a bit more of a historical context, is what the middle graph is supposed to be. Does that explain it a bit further, or? Sorry.
Thank you. Hi. Yeah. You mentioned that you were suggesting increasing by 4 servers and not 1, and you discussed it in the context of if you increment by 1, you are opening yourself to some more risk. My question is, do you have a way to quantify this risk? That is to say, be able to say that if you increment by 1 server, there's a 1% chance you will lose this much traffic by overload, and if you increment by 2 servers, there's a 0.5% chance you will lose this other amount of traffic. Can you quantify that?
So you could probably quantify that in, you can look at your reactive capacity planning and see, assuming you've been doing kind of just pushing up capacity whenever you meet thresholds. And you can look at that and see how much of your SLO has been breached before you realize you needed to increase or decrease, or you need to increase capacity is normally the case. And you can quantify then your SLO in business terms. How many minutes of sales, how many users are kind of angry about that. And that's generally how you would gauge the instant cost. And then what you do is you would take that and you would assume that you would get the period that you increase each time. So 16,000 every 4 months. And then you would say that every 4 months we would dip below that SLO and it would cost our customer, or it would cost us X amount in sales. So if we were to go down to 1 server every 4,000 units, that's, maths is hard for me, but we'll say it's once a month. So then that becomes a, instead of being 3 times a year, it's now, 12 times a year. We dip below that SLO and we lose X amount of sales, and that's very bad. But if we meet somewhere in the middle where it's we're not spending the money to have 14 servers up sitting idle, but we are spending the money to have 3 servers up and sitting idle and 1 active, so that's the 4 I had in the middle, that's a kind of meet in the middle ground where it's we're balancing the cost of running those servers versus the amount of sales we would lose from, we'll say, every 2 months, is you would lose X amount of sales because your SLO dips. So that's a very simple way to kind of quantify that as you begin capacity planning.
Cool, thank you.
No worries.
Any more questions? Okay. Oh.
No worries.
A lot of the capacity planning that you've kind of outlined is sort of slow over, I'll say, a longer term, as opposed to individuals that may be doing daily or multiple times a day to essentially follow the sun or move their traffic around. Do you have any caveats, or have you worked on anything that, might be a damping factor to induced oscillations in terms of, your regression analysis might be either forecasting into the trough or out of the peak? Kind of things?
Yeah, so in that specific example, actually, normalization actually helps quite a lot. We found in that we're experimenting a lot with linear models at the moment, and we found that normalization is scaling all of our numbers, kind of the same, but with statistical models, removes the impact of outliers. So if it's generally, it was outliers that were causing us to either predict either a wild growth or a very sharp decline. So those are the two experiences that I have. I wouldn't say I have too much experience with what you're specifically saying, though. Nice. No worries.
Anyone else? Okay, let's thank Evan again.